Second point, the four great kings are leaders of different hordes of non-human beings. These non-human beings are of very many different kinds, of all sorts of shapes and sizes, and even colors. Some are very beautiful, or at least they are capable of assuming beautiful forms. Most, however, are horribly deformed, misshapen, and ugly. There are the Nagas, the serpents, or the dragons. They're associated with water and with treasure. They can make themselves large or small, visible or invisible. They often have a good understanding of the teaching, but they don't practice it. There are also the Yakshas, who are rather terrible and often of enormous size. Then the Gandharvas, so called because they live on perfumes, in the same way that human beings live on solid food. They live on perfumes, and they're musicians in the palace of Indra, king of the gods, of the heaven of the 33. And the Gandharvas are said to be very uxorious. There's also the Asuras. These are fierce, warlike spirits that are constantly fighting the gods, that is to say, the gods of the heaven of the 33. They're sometimes compared with the giants of Greek mythology. The male Asuras are extremely ugly, but the female Asuras are very beautiful. Then there are the Garudas. These are enormous golden-winged creatures like eagles, and they feed upon Nagas. They feed upon the serpents or dragons. Then the Kingnaras. The name Kingnara means, what? Is it a man? And they're so called because they resemble men to some extent. So when people see them, they're not sure whether they're men or not, or whether it's a man or not, if they're just one. So they say, what? Is it a man? Kingnara? So Kingnara, they are called. According to some authorities, they have horns on their heads. According to other authorities, they have men's heads and birds' bodies. And like the Gandharvas, they're musicians in the palace of Indra. The males sing, the females dance. There are very many other kinds of non-human beings. There are vampires, nightmares, ghosts, ghouls, bogles, fever spirits, and so on. I've no time to describe them all in detail. But between them, they represent the whole mass, as it were, of gross, chaotic, turbulent, earthly energies. Energies that swirl about, as it were, on this earth plane of ours. Energies that only too easily can assume negative and destructive forms. And of all these different kinds of non-human beings, the four great kings are the leaders and sovereigns. Each king rules one particular group, one particular legion, if you like. As we saw earlier on, Dhritarashtra, the protector of the eastern quarter, rules the Gandharvas, or heavenly musicians, and others. Virudaka, the protector of the southern quarter, rules the hungry ghosts, and others. Virupaksha, the protector of the western quarter, rules the dragons, and others. We'll have a few words to say about the special significance of this fact later on. Vaishravana, the protector of the northern quarter, rules the yakshas, or sublime spirits, and others. In other words, the four great kings keep the gross, chaotic, turbulent energies of the earth plane under control. They're not able to change them. They're not able to transform them, but at least they prevent them from getting too much out of hand. And it's only the four great kings who are in a position to do this, in a position to render this kind of service. The gods of the higher heavens, the Brahma gods, for instance, certainly could not do it. Their energies are much too refined. They've no point of contact with Nagas and Rakshasas and Yakshas and so on. Perhaps they're not even aware of their existence. So the four great kings perform a very useful service. They belong to the heavens, but they're in touch with the earth, and they're therefore able to keep the very powerful natural energies of the earth under control. and prevent them having a disruptive effect on the human world.